Also, another difference between therapy and Buddhism is, from a Buddhist viewpoint, all attachment causes suffering. All craving, clinging causes suffering. From at least a Western therapeutic model, attachment and craving are fine. They're good. You just and attach and anger, jealousy, all these things are quite okay. It's just you need to have them in the right amount and express them at the appropriate time to the appropriate person. Yeah, so you're kind of teaching people skills of how to moderate these emotions inside themselves. From a Buddhist viewpoint, our suffering stems from these. And okay, it's helpful to moderate them as a first step, but as long as we have attachment, we're going to be miserable. As long as we have craving and clinging, we're going to be miserable. And in fact, it's our craving and clinging that make us miserable. Very often in therapy, they're showing people how to have life skills to get what you want. Well, maybe some of the therapy needs to be able to give up wanting those things, because what you're wanting is not really going to bring you happiness. Or what you're wanting, creates suffering. Or what you're wanting is leaving yourself, leaves you open to have all sorts of problems, because we have so many expectations on other people. Okay, so as a counselor, you want to moderate, attachment and anger and these things, but people still have to be prepared to accept suffering as long as they have them, because it's the clinging that causes the suffering, not the not getting what we want that causes the suffering. Okay? We think I suffer because I can't get this. I want this and I can't get it. So we think if I get it, I'm going to be happy. But from a Buddhist viewpoint, it's the clinging to it that makes us unhappy to start with, and it's the clinging we have to get rid of. Yeah? It doesn't mean we can't have the thing. Yeah, it just means we're trying to develop a healthy attitude towards it, because as long as we're having a sticky mind going like this, thinking happiness exists outside of me and I gotta get it, we're setting ourselves up for disappointment. So you can see, I'm sure you're quite aware as counselors that lots of times what causes people suffering is they have unrealistic expectations. Like especially in family situations, you get married, you think your husband is, this fantastic guy, and then, it turns out he isn't. Yeah? Or, you have expectations of how your children should be, and, they have their own way of growing up. And so the expectations bring so much suffering because people aren't fulfilling our expectations. So often what we have to, it's the attachment and the craving that cause the expectations. That's what's lying behind it. So often what we need to do is let go of the expectations, we let go of the attachment. Yeah? And somehow really learning to accept the people around us without buying into their dysfunctional behavior. I find a lot people want me to tell them, like after a Dharma talk last night, some woman came up to me and told me this big story about problems with her sister, and what she wanted me to do was reassure her that she had been compassionate enough. Yeah? It's like people can't evaluate themselves, so they're going to look to you as the counselor to tell them, oh, you were compassionate enough, or you were kind enough, or whatever. That's not our business. Our business is to get people to learn to evaluate themselves. Instead of seeking outside approval and outside feedback, people need to be able to look inside and see what their own motivation is and own their own motivation. Because if we think we have a good motivation, but we don't, even if other people tell us we do, we still, underneath it all, don't feel happy with ourselves. Because underneath it, We know our own reality even if we can't admit it to ourselves. Yeah? Whereas if we do something with a positive motivation, even other people don't approve, we can still be confident in what we're doing because we're in touch with what our own motivation is. You know, and if we're acting with it, we've examined the conditions, we have a good motivation, we're acting with clarity, then even if other people don't agree or they misinterpret it, we don't need to, you know, lose confidence. Okay? So I think a big step is helping people to, one, get in touch with what their motivations are and what their feelings are. So not just their feelings, but their motivations. Yeah, we often just emphasize getting in touch with your feelings, but I think getting in touch with your motivations too. Okay, so, but not just getting in touch with them, but learning to evaluate them and discriminate them, and which motivations lead to happiness and which motivations lead to suffering. And when am I rationalizing and justifying and denying my real motivations? And when am I really being truthful? Because even if we've had a bad motivation, if we can be truthful and acknowledge it to ourselves, there's a tremendous sense of relief. So I think often if we can say to people when we're counseling, you know, let them know that, you know, when, if you see things you don't like about yourself, or if you see problems that you've caused, you don't need to feel bad about yourself, because when you acknowledge it, you feel relief. When you feel relief, you know, then we stop tying up so much energy pretending that we didn't do what we did do. Yeah, but we just, you know, can say, I made a mistake. And here's actually where purification comes in from a Buddhist perspective. You know, we have all these purification practices. And I think, although the four opponent powers is taught in a Buddhist context, I think you can teach it in a therapeutic context. Okay? So first, you know, regretting our mistakes. Yeah? So you have to work with a person a long time to get them to see their mistakes. You know, and then to regret them, and to help them see the difference between regret and guilt. Okay? Because there's a big difference. Regret, we just say, I made a mistake, and I'm sorry I did that, because it harmed myself and others. Finished. Guilt says, oh, how could I have done that? I'm so evil, I'm so bad, I'm never going to change. Nobody loves me. Nobody. I mean, guilt is so selfish, so self-centered, you know. Regret isn't self-centered. Regret just says, I made a mistake, I have a feeling of my own goodness, a feeling of self-confidence that enables me to acknowledge my mistake. That's the thing, you know, showing people that that acknowledging our mistakes means that we have self-confidence and courage. You know, it's the courageous, confident person who can acknowledge their mistakes, not the coward, okay? So getting people to that point, just where they can acknowledge it and have regret. Then the second step, and here I do them in a slightly different order, I think restoring the relationship, okay, in some sense or another, which means whoever we harmed, you know, we try and change our attitude towards whoever it was that we harmed. Even if that person's dead, even if that person doesn't want to speak to us anymore, it doesn't matter. You know, if we did something negative in relationship to them, it was because we were angry or jealous or clinging or resentful or, you know, spiteful or whatever it is. But we need to change our attitude towards that person. Yeah, and see some goodness in them, maybe forgive them for the harm that they did to us, see that maybe we harmed that other person because we were angry. We were angry because they did something to us, but what they did to us, they did because they wanted to be happy and didn't want to suffer, and they didn't know how to go about getting their own happiness. So they harmed us as a perverted way of trying to be happy themselves. So we don't need to hate them for that. We can have compassion for them. In the same way that we have compassion for ourselves, when we do things that are, you know, in our attempt to be happy, but we do really stupid, harmful things. So teaching about forgiveness and compassion and patience, teaching people how to have a different attitude, I think is really useful. Then the third, making a determination to try and avoid the action in the future. Some things, you know, we've done are so horrible, we can pretty clearly say, I will never do those again. We know ourselves well enough and can say that. Other things we can't really truthfully say, I'll never do that again. So then what it's better to do is say, okay, what is a good time limit whereby you think you can keep that? You know, 1 day, 2 days, a week. Have them set a realistic time limit whereby they'll try really hard not to do that behavior again. Okay? So if it was criticizing somebody or talking behind somebody's back or whatever, you know, some realistic sense of time whereby they can really try and be aware. And then as the counselor, you help them build skills for, well, if a similar situation happens again, how can you deal with it? And let's run through some scenarios of how you would deal with it if a similar thing happened again. You know, or even if you went back and, you know, what happened to you before, this mistake you made, if that were to, you know, if you knew now what you knew, if you knew then what you know now, what are some ways you could deal with it and have them go through that and do some role play or whatever. Okay? So that they get some determination to avoid it. And then fourth is some kind of remedial action. And so getting people, I mean, if people are religious in whatever religion they are, have them do some kind of spiritual practice. I mean, Buddhism, we have them chant and meditate and make offerings and, you know, I mean, you know all those things. If they're Christian, if they're Islam, you know, whatever according to their own religion, they can do something. Or they can also offer some community service. So you get them to do something for others. Because I think this is a big thing. Often when people have problems, they're so busy thinking about themselves that just gets them locked into themselves. If you can say, okay, well, part of your healing is to go out and do some volunteer work. You know, you feel guilty because you weren't with your mother when your mother died. You know, well, I mean, how are you going to know when she dies to start with? You know, you weren't negligent as a kid to not be with her. But still, if you feel like you want to help old people because you regret not having helped your mother enough when she was old, there's senior citizen centers. Go do volunteer work, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks. You know, maybe you can't help your mother, but you help somebody else's mother. And that's part of your therapy. And I think that can be so good for people because they get confidence seeing that they can reach out and give something to others. Yeah? So I think that process of the four opponent powers is very useful. So, I mean, this is an interesting thing because that leads into the topic of ethical discipline. Yeah? In American therapy, they don't talk much about ethical discipline. It's kind of like, well, yeah, you know, we want people to be honest, but, you know, we don't emphasize that if you keep good ethical discipline, you're going to have better relationships with people and you're going to feel less guilt. Yeah? And so sometimes it can be very helpful to run through the 10 destructive actions, you know, with people and have them see, you know, oh, when I do this, I don't like myself very much. And in addition, other people don't like me very much and then they respond to me in a certain way. So, you know, if I can keep good ethical discipline and stop doing these things, yeah, I don't create so much negative karma, but also I get along a whole lot better with other people. And to help people see that just basic morality can help tremendously, you know, prevent a lot of psychological problems. You know, really a lot. Yeah, because if you look, I mean, so many of our problems, you know, so much of our guilt stems around the 10 negative actions. Yeah, it's right there.